Okay, the Senate Committee on Human Services will come to order. Today is March 22nd, which happens to be my little brother's birthday. Happy birthday, James. And anybody else in the room whose birthday it is?
My mother's birthday.
Your mother's birthday?
My late mother.
Yeah. Well, happy birthday to your late mother. What was her name?
Mother? Yeah. She had the most beautiful name in the world. Sarah.
Aww. Okay. With or without an H?
She had no H.
She had no H?
No, she did have an H.
Oh.
She had an H. You don't have an H.
It's getting real thick in here, so yes. I'm going to go get some boots on.
All right.
Jeez.
So we are not ready yet with Senate Bill 58, and we are going to repost Senate Bill 833, which has to do with making referrals for peer services when individuals who have attempted suicide have left the hospital. It really just requires a permission slip, but it turns out it has a $24 million fiscal on it. So we're going to have further discussion about that that is really eye-opening, because it really goes to how few services we have available to people. It's hard to refer people to services that don't exist. But we are ready to open up a work session on Senate Bill 59.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 59 authorizes the long-term care ombudsman to petition for protective orders upon the belief that a person in long-term care facility or a residential facility is in need of a protective order. It establishes notice requirements. It limits the disclosure of minimum personal health information reasonably necessary to prevent imminent health or safety threat. It declares emergency and is effective on passage. There's a dash one amendment that defines adult foster homes and modifies the definition of protected information. It permits the ombudsman to petition for a protective order for a resident of an adult foster home. It removes the provision of protective services from the list of authorized petitions for protective orders and adds the authority to petition for an appointment of an attorney for a resident. It also clarifies provisions. The dash one amendment has a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact, and the first public hearing on this bill was on February 13th, and there's a sub-referral to Judiciary.
Correct, and that's why there is, as the Dash 1 Amendment came back, all the parties worked on this, there is a little tweak that needs to be made. There's a statutory reference, but this has a subsequent to Judiciary. Given where we are to the deadline, we need to get it to Judiciary, and they can make that final tweak there and anything else that pops up, but we're at that point where things with subsequent referrals need to move on. So, Senator Olson.
Chair Gilstrap, I move to adopt the Dash 1 Amendment dated 3/13/17.
Senator Olson moves to adopt the Dash 1 Amendment dated 3/13/17. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Gilstrap, I move Senate Bill 59 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Judiciary by prior reference.
Senator Olson moves Senate Bill 59 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Judiciary by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered, and Senate Bill 59 is on its way to the next place. So I'm closing the work session on Senate Bill 59 and opening up a work session on Senate Bill 95.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 95 requires certain securities professionals to report suspected financial exploitation of elderly, disabled, or vulnerable individuals to the Department of Consumer and Business Services and to DHS. It permits securities professionals to notify third parties previously designated by the victim of suspected financial exploitation. It permits securities professionals to delay disbursement of accounts and to provide notice if professional reasonably believes that disbursement may result in financial exploitation. It also establishes penalties. There is also a Dash 1 amendment which in form replaces the measure, but in substance makes some changes, including it requires a qualified individual to report suspected financial exploitation of vulnerable persons, and it defines vulnerable persons and provides other definitions. It requires DCBS to forward those reports go to DCBS. It then requires DCBS to forward those reports of exploitation to DHS and to investigate any potential securities violations and notify law enforcement of potential crimes. And it exempts financial institutions and trust company employees from mandatory reporting requirements. It also permits notification of third parties as designated by the vulnerable person. It also permits securities professionals to delay disbursements of accounts to avoid financial exploitation. It limits the liabilities for securities professionals complying with the measure, and it requires securities professionals to provide relevant records to DCBS, DHS, or law enforcement upon request. It also establishes penalties. And the dash one has a minimal expenditure impact and no revenue impact. This bill was originally heard on 2/13, and it also has a sub-referral to judiciary.
Thank you very much. And just to summarize that, you'll remember when we heard this bill, there were some concerns that were raised about having requirements for these folks to make calls to multiple entities. This dash one amendment addresses that, narrows the people that need to make the notifications, and provides better protection to individuals that are doing that. Do we have DCBS here in the room? Thank you. Because I see a look of a question.
Yeah, I think I have some questions on the dash one. So.
Okay. Would you introduce yourself for the record?
Of course. My name is Erin Tiberbaum. I'm a senior policy analyst for the Department of Consumer and Business Services.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would insurance agents be included under the definition of qualified individuals under the dash ones?
Through the chair, excuse me, Senator Knopp. No, they would not.
Are persons who sell annuities included under the definition?
Through the chair, Senator Knopp. That depends. If it's a variable annuity, then that's classified as a security. Fixed annuities are classified as more of an insurance product, and so they would not be.
Follow up. So I think investment advisors are not currently subject to any continuing education to maintain their license. So does DCBS have a plan on educating salesmen and advisors and qualified individuals on the requirements under the bill?
Through the chair, FINRA, the regulatory or one of the regulatory self-regulatory organizations, does require continuing education, and they do provide education with regards to financial exploitation. NASA, which is the North American Securities Administrators Association, which it was the basis for the Model Act that this bill reflects, also has provided training and has developed it for state agencies. So if we have a request for education, we can certainly look at the NASA model and determine how it is that we could provide that if necessary.
Okay.
And Senator Dembrough.
And so again, the channel for complaint would be to DCBS under this amendment.
Correct. And then you send it out to the appropriate.
Senator Gelser, Senator Dembrough, yes, what we've been looking at is that we currently have an online complaint system that sends an automatic notification, and we can program that to send an automatic notification to us at the same time that it sends it to DHS, so that it should be, we should take care of the dual reporting automatically.
Great. And then this bill also has a subsequent referral to judiciary, so it has another stop.
It does. And Madam Chair, I may ultimately support the bill, but I'll probably just vote no. To flag members in the Judiciary Committee to come talk to me about it. I forget to talk to them?
That sounds very good. So why don't we have a motion so that we can move to that.
Chair Gelser, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 3/15/17.
Senator Olson moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 3/15/17. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Olson.
I'm going to be a no.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 95 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Judiciary by prior reference.
Right. Senator Dembrough moves Senate Bill 95 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that it go to the Committee on Judiciary by prior reference. Is there any discussion?
Yes, Madam Chair. I will be a no on this. I have great concerns over this bill. I know it's going to Judiciary, and I would like to, as with Senator Knope, make certain that they are aware and cognizant of the fact that there are some concerns with this legislation.
Okay. Thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing none, we should call roll on this one.
Senator Dendro?
Aye.
Senator Knope?
No.
Senator Bonas Anderson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
No.
Chair Gelson?
Aye. The motion passes, and it is on its way to the Committee on Judiciary. And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 95. Thank you all very much, and thank you for the work on the amendments, and we'll see you down in Judiciary. With that, I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 223.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 223 directs the Oregon Health Authority to adopt rules requiring in-home caregivers employed by or directing or contracting with in-home care agencies to meet training requirements for home care workers established by the Home Care Commission. There is also a dash one amendment. It requires Home Care Commission to establish qualifications and training requirements for in-home care workers that are as rigorous as requirements for licensing in-home care agencies by OHA.
Thank you. Welcome, Senator Riley.
Thank you. For the record, Chuck Riley, Senate District 15, Hillsboro, Forest Grove, Cornelius, North Plains, Roy, Verbort, and some farms. As you can see, Madam Chair, for the amendment reverses what was a mistake in drafting. This is basically a bill that I drafted for a constituent. Currently, the education requirements for agencies who provide home care work are much more rigorous than those who work through the commission, and we believe that they should be the same or close to the same. They should all have good education requirements.
Right. So it's the dash one.
Correct.
Amendment, which is not in here.
Oh. Did it not get uploaded?
No. Oh, no. Sorry. I have the wrong number in there. It's the problem with being blind. Okay. And will you talk us through exactly what the... Any questions for Senator Riley or further discussion about the dash one? Do you want to walk us through exactly what would change with the dash one? So we passed the bill. What will be different?
Well, what will be different is that the home care workers under the commission will have to start having more rigorous education. It's possible that they might reduce the education for the others, but the goal is to equalize them.
So how would we be sure that it doesn't seem like it would be a good idea to lessen training or to reduce training
I agree.
For anybody.
But the agencies are going to have to figure that out. One of the problems with the commission, the people in the commission, is a lot of times those are family members or friends, mm-hmm. and the education requirements, yeah, they have basically none. And even friends and family need some education to do home care. So we want to at least move them towards the other home care workers' requirements, just so they have some requirements. Currently, they're not much at all. And as I pointed out, the constituent is the owner of an agency that has home care workers.
Very good. Thank you very much. Are there other questions for Senator Riley?
I have one, but I'm trying to get there. I'm there now. In your bill, you refer to Section 410.604, Duties of the Commission. Mm-hmm. And in there, when I read that last night, they already have requirements for education. So how is this going to be different?
Well, they're going to be more rigorous. The ones under the agency are much more rigorous, and it is seen as unfair, and so the requirements for the commission need to be more rigorous. And quite often they're almost non-existent, depending on who it is that's doing the care. I think there's someone from the commission from the agencies here to talk about that.
Right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And you are welcome to stay, but we also understand if you need to go and chair your committee.
I do. Thank you.
Thank you for being patient with us while we did our work sessions. Next, we've got Kendall Mason and Angela Albee. Welcome.
I'll go first. Good afternoon, Chair Gelser, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. My name is Kendall Mason, and I'm a policy strategist for SEIU Local 503. And I'm here today to testify in regards to this bill, Senate Bill 223. We agree with the end goal of the Dash 1 amendment of Senate Bill 223, which we believe is to increase training for home care workers who serve consumers throughout the state. We don't believe that Senate Bill 223 is the right way to go about that. Home care work is one of the fastest growing needs in our state and our nation, as our population is aging rapidly and more people are relying on IDD services. We believe that the work around how we develop a training plan should be integrated into an overall workforce plan for how we create workforce ladders and how we recruit additional workers and how we ensure workers have adequate training to meet the needs of consumers. This bill does not take into consideration any of the work that's already being done to build the strategic plan. In 2015, the legislature passed Senate Bill 775, which created a task force that was charged with putting together a strategic plan for home care workers through the Oregon Home Care Commission. The commission is currently in charge of home care training and the registry that home care workers use. Just this past December, the commission secured a consultant specializing in developing strategic workforce development plans, Thomas P. Miller and Associates. They'll be wrapping up their work by the end of May, and the Oregon Home Care Commission will ideally have the blueprint for building an actual robust workforce of home care workers who are well-trained and prepared to provide high-quality service. At the same time, the Oregon Secretary of State is conducting an audit of the home care workers who serve through the Department of Aging and People with Disabilities, and this audit is looking at whether or not the home care worker program is working effectively for consumers. And it will hopefully also result in a list of areas that we can work to build out or improve our workforce development in a way that is most beneficial to consumers and workers alike. SEIU has been working to increase the training through each contract we've bargained, and while we feel the current training options and structures do not adequately support the demand within the workforce, we think the current planning and analysis will create a roadmap for how to thoughtfully develop and professionalize the workforce. We owe it to the consumers and the workers to make these changes through a collaborative and thoughtful process, and while we support the general concept this bill is seeking, we feel like we'd better serve both consumers and workers by continuing the current work through DHS and the Commission to create a comprehensive plan. We hope to be back in the 2018 session with the next steps from bills that we worked on from 2015, and we hope to create a long-term plan that includes enhanced training and a path to a workforce ladder.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Gelser, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Angie Albee. I'm a legislative coordinator for the Oregon Department of Human Services. I'm here today representing Aging and People with Disabilities and the Office of Developmental Disabilities Programs at the department, and just simply here to provide information about what currently stands for training requirements for home care workers and personal support workers. To begin, a home care worker is hired directly by a senior or an adult with a physical disability or their representative. DHS pays the home care worker on behalf of the senior or adult with a physical disability receiving supports or services. A personal support worker is hired directly by an individual with an intellectual or developmental disability and or their parent or guardian, and DHS actually pays the personal support worker on behalf of the individual receiving supports or services through a fiscal intermediary. The home care worker or personal support worker process is consumer-driven and or individual-driven. It's a process where consumers, which we refer in the Aging and People with Disabilities program, we refer to individuals as consumers, and on on the developmental, intellectual and developmental disability side, we refer to them as individuals. So I'm going to refer to them as both today. The consumers and or individual employers are responsible for determining whether the specific home care worker or personal support worker has the skills and abilities needed to meet their specific needs. Consumer and or individual employers decide which trainings and qualifications that an individual must have to work for them. Home care workers and personal support workers are not certified. However, as enrolled care providers, DHS does conduct a background check every 2 years on those individuals providing supports and services. In addition, the home care worker or personal support worker must complete an orientation. This orientation is not a training. It's simply an onboarding process that includes topics such as consumer rights, confidentiality, timesheet submission guidelines, mandatory reporting, and universal standard precautions as discussed. The Oregon Home Care Commission provides training opportunities for home care workers and personal support workers statewide. And while a variety of trainings are offered, there are no requirements for those home care workers or personal support workers to complete those trainings. The exception is for home care workers who desire to be referred to the long-term care registry for portability. And for those individuals, they must complete 4 training classes, and every 2 years, one of those must be a safety training class. I just wanted to provide some basic information to you today, and thank you for your time.
Hey, thank you both very much. Any questions? No, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else that would like to be heard on Senate Bill 223? Seeing none, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 223 and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 140. I'm going to start with Senator Montes Anderson. Am I correct in remembering that the representatives want a bat cleanup? Do you want to come now or you want to come later?
Later.
Later. Same. Is the same true for you,
Representative
Gorsuch?
You want later? I'll go after the Senate. That's right.
Okay. You're also welcome to sit together with her.
Okay.
All right. Madam Chair.
And you don't have to, but.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a good idea.
Would you like me to
say yes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 140 appropriates monies from the general fund to the Oregon Youth Authority for gang intervention services in Multnomah County. It declares emergency and is effective on passage.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. I'm State Senator Lori Montes Anderson. I'm delighted to bring Senate Bill 140. My role here is to let you get the lay of the land of the district that my district that we're talking about. The East Metro Gang Enforcement Team is critical for our area. It serves an extremely precarious geographic area, which clearly demonstrates the need for outside investment. The Rockwood area, for example, is extremely young and very diverse, with a median age of 27, and 40% of the households have a child under the age of 18. 50% of the population is non-white, and over 60 languages are spoken in their homes. This youth and the diversity is coupled with some alarming education outcomes. The Reynolds School District, which operates within the MGET, we call East Metro Gang Enforcement Team MGET, boundaries, has the lowest on-time graduation rates and the highest number of dropouts in the region. Fully 42% of their students fail to graduate on time. The area has substantial poverty, with 35% of people living below the poverty line. As a retired public health nurse, the following statistic is really particularly alarming to me. It's the 97233 zip code, which is served by MGET, is the unhealthiest zip code in Oregon, according to a Truven index. So when you couple all of these statistics, you can clearly see a dangerous combination of factors that contribute to the social and economic circumstances gangs prey on for new members and for their criminal enterprises. And as far as the types of gangs and the number of gangs, I'll have people behind me give you that information. It is really, MGET is a critical part of the answer to this issue and has been instrumental in holding the area together. And the mayor of Gresham is sorry he could not be here, but he's giving the state of the city address. Is that what you call it?
That
close
right.
enough. and so I want to say that on his behalf.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
It's nice to be here. Chair Gelser, members of the committee, my name is State Representative Chris Gorsak. I am from one half of the Senator's District, District 49, East Multnomah County. I have all of the small cities, plus a little bit of Gresham and a little bit of Portland. One, just to provide just a little more context to what the senator was telling you, in the past, say, probably 10 to 15 years ago, most of the gang activity was occurring in the city of Portland. And that meant that you had one jurisdiction, one law enforcement agency, and Portland had a fair number of resources to deal with all of this. What's happened in the last 10, 15 years is that many of the folks that were involved in that sort of activity have moved out and migrated into places like Macon County, Rockwood. And so what we have then is that that area has Troutdale, Wood Village, Fairview, Gresham, parts of Multnomah County itself unincorporated. And so what we've ended up with is that a large number of the gang activity movement has geographically shifted into an area that's not as unified in terms of law enforcement activities, and also in terms of costs. Resources are much thinner out in the east part of Multnomah County. So that's just as a context. The thing that I've seen, because I've been a teacher at Mount Hood Community College in criminal justice and geography for about 21 years, so I watched this area change pretty substantially. I also was a police officer in another life, which, you know, that was a time actually even before we had a lot of the gang problems. But we watched all of these things. I've watched them within this context. And I have to say that I believe that the East Metro Gang Enforcement Team is really an essential part of East County. And it is part of what we have been trying to create in terms of a more holistic approach. So last session, we were able to get funding for a Boys and Girls Club facility, which should open soon at 162nd and Stark. There's also a new open school, and we get funding for that as well. And the way that we talked about that was to think about, we want to try and interdict, stop kids from getting involved in these problems in the first place. But we also realize that we're going to have some children that are still getting involved in gangs. So rather than just, I just want you to know that we haven't put all of our eggs into the gang enforcement police basket. We're trying to do this in a more holistic way. We do know that gangs can be attractive, and especially in places where there aren't a lot of economic opportunities as we face. There aren't a lot of recreational facilities. A lot of the schools are stressed. And so we feel that all of these pieces, MGET, the school, Boys and Girls Clubs, that they're all coming together to really form an alternative to gang membership. So based on academic research and also having worked in law enforcement, I know that gang activity is transitory. In other words, it doesn't stay within one set of boundaries. It very freely crosses jurisdictional boundaries, and it competes for the attention of young people who might otherwise engage in more constructive pursuits. So attempting to tackle these issues in this sort of kind of traditional siloed approach by treating our jurisdictions and supporting institutions as kind of discrete entities is not really very effective. So, in conclusion, I believe that it's only through a comprehensive approach, like we have with MGET and our community-based outreach programs, that law enforcement and the community can achieve the coordinated approach necessary to interrupt the activities and recruitment of gangs, and therefore help keep the community safe and provide beneficial alternatives for children. And I strongly urge you to support this, and I'm certainly available for questions.
I do want to make one more comment that my district has the greatest concentration of poverty, the densest population of poverty in the state. That was it. Thank you.
Thank you both very much. Oh, Senator Olson has a question for you. But we're going to keep our questions short so we don't run out of time for our hearing like we did the other day.
A very short question, and I support this. But my question is, since we're looking at closing an Oregon Youth Authority facility in up near Astoria, will you be on hand to help support funding that program up there? Because we need to keep that facility open.
Certainly.
Putting you on the spot is what I'm doing.
I will say, Senator Gelser and Senator Olson, I absolutely do not want to see any of the OYA facilities closed. So I'm very supportive of keeping that open. OYA does a wonderful job, and they're another piece, you know, kind of downstream. And I think that we have to do everything we can to support that operation as well.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions for this panel? No? Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
And we're going to take a brief pause. Today we have 5 members with explicit schedules, so we are going to temporarily move out of 140 and bring up and temporarily open Senate Bill 314 and bring up Kelly Sutherland and Jackie Winters together.
Yes.
Because we're going to lose Senator Winters. Then we're going to close 314, go back and finish 140, and then we'll come back and pick up Sam Barber and Mary Ellen Glenn.
All right. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate.
And why don't we let them just explain it to save time?
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. For the record, I'm Senator Jackie Winters. I represent District 10, which most of you know as parts of Salem, Monmouth, Independence, and Almsville and Turner. I'm here today to support Senate Bill 314. As most of you know, I've been a very strong supporter and advocate for relief nurseries since I came to the legislature in 1999. And during that time, I've seen the system of relief nurseries grow from 3 or 4 to date, it's 31. And, you know, with me is Kelly Sutherland, who is one of the first, actually, relief nurseries in the state out of Eugene, because they actually was the pilot that started the whole relief nursery system. And as you know, we've seen this system with the objective of getting the outcomes of helping to keep families together and keeping kids out of foster care. You know, it's one of those that one of my constituents, I call him my constituents, even though he's in the Ken Thatcher's district, but Dick Whitnell, and he's fond of talking about the return on investment. And when we first started the relief nurseries, I can still remember going through and working with the relief nurseries and saying, you know, one of the things that you're going to have to provide for this body, and that is performance measures that says you actually are doing what you said you're going to do. So when you come and say that the investment of $5,000 per child per family, and that instead of $25,000 in foster care, that you really are accomplishing that. And I have to tell you that they do just that. And the other piece that is always that a part of relief nurseries, it's one of the few programs that we have that they're required to actually have real, true community investment and engagement. Relief nurseries, unlike some of the things that we actually do in this building, I can still remember legislation I passed in 2001, and the good Senator Knope was here when we did the Oregon Children's Plan. They were required to at least have 25% of that budget had to come from the community. And in most instances, they exceed those dollar amounts. They also have done, over time, have done everything from working on therapeutic involvement with them. And I'm not going to steal her thunder, but she'll get into the program. But it came to our attention after we, this body, had taken them out of the Commission on Children and Families, which we abolished that commission, and now that they are in the Early Learning Council, Representative Nathanson and I began to hear some concerns. Senate Bill 314, because of those concerns, I want to ensure that the work that they've begun and that they do is there, and that it stays the way we intend for it to be, that they don't lose those principles and those values and those outcomes that we intend for them to have. And it's for that reason that I and Representative Nathanson sponsored this legislation, and Ms. Sutherland is here so she can give you more details and some of the issues that are involved. But for me, I think it's important that we make certain, this body makes certain, that what we began a lot of years ago and what we invested in a lot of years ago, that those outcomes that we expected then will be outcomes that we continue to have as we go forth. So, yes.
Thank you very much, Senator Winters. And thank you, Chair Gelzer and Vice Chair Olson and members of the committee for allowing me time today. I'm Kelly Sutherland. As Senator Winter said, I'm the Executive Director of Relief Nursery in Eugene and the Relief Nursery Robin Jacob Child and Family Center in Springfield. Senator Winters always steals the show when she talks about how relief nurseries have a long history of leveraging community dollars and sustaining growth and the sustained growth and breadth of relief nursery programs across the state and the remarkable return on investment that relief nurseries provide. We're so effective because we are true public-private partnerships. We are born of the communities and buoyed by the communities that we serve, and we provide services that are not provided elsewhere. Relief nurseries have a very unique partnership with the state as well. We're a child abuse and neglect prevention agency, but we are integral parts of the human services, education, and healthcare continuums. We serve the highest risk families and children that need and must have our services to succeed. The children we serve are the most vulnerable, and the parents we help face enormous challenges. We know what happens when they don't get the help they need. Relief nurseries interrupt the familiar and costly, in both human suffering and state dollars, trajectory of foster care, special education, juvenile justice, and even criminal justice involvement. Sam Barber, who is here, will talk about, he's representing the relief nurseries, and we'll talk about SB 314 and how it more clearly defines and constitutes what a relief nursery is and how it will acknowledge the Oregon Association of Relief Nurseries' leadership and oversight of the statewide system. I'm the executive director of the founding nursery, as Senator Winter said, and we're celebrating 40 years of providing services to our community, which is why the introduction of SB 314 is so special for us. And we want to thank Senator Winters and Representative Nathanson. In Eugene and Springfield, we serve over 1,000 children and families each year. These are families coping with a multitude of risks: unemployment, homelessness, poverty, mental health issues, substance abuse issues, and domestic violence. What's significant is that nearly half of the families we serve have a history with child welfare. But after receiving relief nursery services, fewer than 5% of our families we make child abuse and neglect reports and child welfare reports on, and foster care placement is rare for a family involved with a relief nursery. We first meet our families through our outreach and crisis intervention programs. We provide respite child care, home visits, and we meet the families where they are, and we create a safety plan. The children receive developmental assessments, and many of the children that we serve present with challenges, social and emotional issues, and speech and occupational delays. The core program is our therapeutic early childhood program. These are therapeutic classrooms for children in infancy to 5 years of age, and the goal is to address their special needs, provide a therapeutic environment with a high ratio of adult to child, working one-on-one with the children, with the goal of preparing them to arrive in kindergarten able to learn and not requiring costly special education services. Part of the therapeutic early childhood program model is that the teacher also serves as a home visitor. A tenet of our overall model is that the child and parent both must receive services to achieve lasting success. We provide parent education classes in-home and on-site with child care and meals. Some nurseries provide drug and alcohol recovery support services, mental health counseling, and special education services for children. This, again, is addressing how we are within multiple continuums: human services, education, and even health care. We have wraparound comprehensive services that break down barriers to getting help. And I know that many of you are familiar with Relief Nurseries and have nurseries in your community. But if you have not been to a nursery in a while or you've never seen a Relief Nursery, please accept an open invitation to visit one of our sites. The sounds and the scenes of the joy of the children playing in a safe and secure environment with nurturing adults who support and guide them and parents working hard to learn a better way to care for their children, the transformational power of these moments cannot be underestimated. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any questions that you might have?
Are there questions for the good senator?
Madam Chair, I'll just make a comment. I was lured out to a Relief Nursery site.
Lured.
And the upshot was I signed on to this bill as a sponsor because I was so impressed with the work that was done. The location that I visited was on the eastward fringes of my district, very close to the area that you just heard about from Senator Monis Anderson. And, you know, there's a lot of poverty in that area. There's a lot of young children who could wind up down the wrong path, but because of the work that's being done, I think they have a real future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything further for this panel? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
So we are temporarily stepping away from Senate Bill 314 and going back to Senate Bill 140. And I'd like to invite Omar Medina and Jonathan Gamboa. Welcome. And if you can just start by sharing your name with us for the record, we are looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Hello, Chair Gelser, Vice Chair Olson, and the rest of the committee. My name is Omar Medina, and I live in East Multnomah County. I am a caseworker with Northwest Family Services, and I work directly with gang-impacted youth and their families. I'm here to ask for your support of Senate Bill 140 to provide funding for critical gang prevention services in East Multnomah County. This area is believed to have around 100 unique gang sets and up to 2,500 individuals involved in these gangs. Gang intervention is not just about police forces breaking up fights in the streets. If we really want to make a difference, we need to invest in prevention. Youth who are at risk have been identified as those who have disengaged from school, use alcohol or drugs, and those who have experienced negative life events. At Northwest Family Services, we work to address all of these risk factors, and due to gang prevention grants, are able to serve youth from middle school all the way up to the age of 24. Last year, we met our gang prevention grant deliverables by reaching over 30 opportunity youth. We helped highly truant or dropped out youth get reconnected back into school. We helped students who were not going to graduate get connected into a GED program and also helped several opportunity youth enter the workforce. We addressed barriers to their success by providing drug and alcohol treatment in the schools, provided support for school success through mentoring and life skills training, starting in the middle schools all the way through high school and even into the, those who are in their GED program, provided wraparound services for high-risk families, and served multiple teen parents. And I just want to quickly give you just two stories of people that I have been working with. So one is Antonio. He's 17, and I changed his name for this. He's a 17-year-old Latino youth who was referred to me because he was getting in trouble at school and was not on track to graduate high school. He entered his senior year with 5.5 credits, which you need 24 to be able to graduate. After meeting with Antonio and addressing certain barriers and working on life skills with him, he decided he really wanted to work hard to get his diploma. So I helped him transfer to an alternative high school, Reynolds Learning Academy, where he went from a cumulative GPA of 1.2 being his highest to this last semester he was able to get a 3.0 GPA. He is now at Oregon Youth Challenge and will be back in June to complete a fifth year and graduate with his diploma. which is an incredible feat. And then I have another family who I'm working with, wraparound services with the whole family, but they were the victims of a drive-by shooting. There is a 16-year-old girl, a 20-year-old girl, and then the 20-year-old had a baby who's 3 years old at the time of the shooting. About 20 bullet holes were found in their house. They're still dealing with the trauma that came from that event. I'm through these grants that we have for gang prevention, I've been able to help this family get connected to services and get the help that they've needed. So these services are vital to our youth. Jonathan is going to give you a little bit of his story. Jonathan's a student that I have been working with for about a year now. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
All right. My name is Jonathan, and I am 17 years old, and I'm a senior at Reynolds High School in Troutdale, Oregon. Well, for my junior year, I was caught under the influence of alcohol and was suspended from school. I was referred to Northwest Family Services for drug and alcohol counseling at my school. I was already affiliated with known gang members, and it was impacting my life. People I had grown up with were either in jail, and usually most of them like being shot at and all that, you know. At 16 years old, my cousin went to jail before attempted murder. And like the gun violence is like it's gonna get worse because it's easy to get guns, and young kids are just being influenced by gang members in the community, just like I was. And my community needs gang prevention because, like, if you don't spend the money on preventing it, you will need to spend more money on prisons. We need to prevent it before we end up like L.A. or Chicago, where, like, it's not even safe to be in the streets. I have turned my life around. I am not only clean and sober, but I'm also graduating in June. I want to see more kids in my community to care about their education than being gang-affiliated and just throwing their lives away. Please continue supporting Senate Bill 140. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this panel? Senator Dimbro.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Jonathan, so what are your plans for next year? Do you know yet?
I'm just going to go to community college.
Mount Hood?
Mount Hood. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you both.
Don't get him.
I teach at the other institution. Oh.
All right. Thank you both very much. Desiree Strong and Brisa Servin, please.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
My name is Desiree Stang, and I'm a drug and alcohol counselor for Northwest Family Services. Northwest Family Services is a nonprofit organization. Our mission is to promote child well-being and family stability. We're community-based and serve Multnomah County and Clackamas County. I'm based in East County, where we serve 5 different major high schools and middle schools. Being in schools is very helpful when working with adolescents because not only can we meet them during school hours, but we're able to communicate with principals and vice principals and teachers also. We're working with principals and vice principals to reduce disciplinary measures that will keep kids from disengaging from school and providing treatment rather than suspensions and expulsions. I work with a very vulnerable population. These students are very low income with histories of trauma and do not have the means to pay for drug and alcohol treatment. Many of our services are connected. For example, I had a middle school student recently that I was working with during a very critical time in her life. She was running away from home, using many different substances, and these substances were provided by older men. Unfortunately, drugs are connected with many other things like gangs and sex trafficking. This client was gang impacted, and we suspected that she was being trafficked also. Luckily, we have many different programs, one of which was an awareness program on child sex trafficking. This meant I had the staff to consult with that had been trained in finding warning signs for clients who have been sex trafficked. After working with this client for a few months, I was able to get police involvement and help her get into residential treatment. There's a great need in the community for our services. At Reynolds High School alone, there were 114 alcohol and drug incidents just last year. And that's just of the ones that got caught. There's a great need in the community for our services. By building a relationship with that client, I was able to intervene before it got worse. She could have gone missing, gotten deeper into sex trafficking, and no one would have even noticed. I truly believe that Northwest Family Services does an amazing job at helping students maintain a substance-free lifestyle while helping them set and accomplish future goals and help them to improve their lives. I ask for your support on Senate Bill 140 so that we can continue to provide preventative services to youth and their families in the community.
Thank you.
This is someone that I worked with named Brisa.
Welcome.
My name is Brisa, and I am 16-year-old sophomore. I started working with Northwest Family Service when I got in trouble with marijuana. A police officer referred me to go to peer court, which led me to drug and alcohol counseling and a class my family went to called Family Empowerment. Before Northwest Family Service, I'm not going to lie, I was going down the wrong path. I was always getting in trouble. I didn't care about school, and even things at my house were hard. I am now very clean and sober and doing well in school, maintaining my grades, and have gotten involved in sports and other community. I came here today not to talk about my past, but to talk about not only my family, but other people's families. Future. I have a 9-year-old brother and younger cousins who I care a lot about, and I don't want them to be affected by gang violence. In my neighborhood, like, I see kids running around and dressing like gangsters, even some of them carrying bats around. I feel like kids should be focused on school and their education instead of getting themselves involved in something they're going to regret later on in their life. Programs like Northwest Family Service can help my community to have more opportunities to choose better paths for their lives. Therefore, I am here to ask that you guys continue your support on Senate Bill 140 because my community really needs it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm so glad that you took the time to come today and that you've gotten involved in all these services, and it means a lot to see you taking that leadership role. So thank you.
Yes.
Are there questions for this panel? No? Thank you. I hope you both come back often.
Thank you.
And if you ever want to run for office, you should consider yourself asked. All right. Next up, Chief Robin Sells and Commander Monty Reeser, please. Welcome.
Thank you.
And somebody else.
Vasquez of the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office that's assisting us.
All right. So just a quick question. So on the list that you all gave me, so does Mike Magnum want to pull up a chair and come up too?
I'm happy to step back and wait my turn patiently.
That might be helpful because I'm told to bring you and Mr. Magnum together.
Okay.
Is that okay?
That's fine with
but
me.
But whatever you want is fine.
That's fine. That's fine. I don't know if he's here. I don't believe he's here.
Oh, he's not here? Yes, he's here. He's waving at me.
Okay. Oh, come on. I didn't see.
Now I'm really confused. So are you going to come together with Mr. Vasquez?
I mean, I can't. However you want me to do it.
I'm just following the script that you all gave me.
We'll take it.
All right. All right. Very good. Very good.
We're givers here. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Robin Sells, and I am the Chief of Police of Gresham. I deeply appreciate the opportunity to join you today and testify on behalf of Senate Bill 140, which funds the East Metro Gang Enforcement Team, which is the City of Gresham's top priority legislatively. By way of background, the East Metro Gang Enforcement Team was formed by the state legislature in 2005, recognizing that the gang issues we were experiencing in East Multnomah County were more than any single entity could address and have statewide implications. The 7-member team represents a collaboration between Multnomah County Sheriff's Office and the cities of Gresham, Trout, Dilwood Village, and Fairview. That collaboration has been key. While we know the gangs engage in violent crime, narcotics, human trafficking, and property crime, we also know that their methods and strategy are constantly changing. When I started in law enforcement, gang activity primarily around turf areas, protecting specific geographic markets for their criminal enterprises. That has changed substantially. We now have apartment complexes in our city that have members of various gangs all essentially living under one roof. Increasingly, in recent years, gangs have been transitory and constantly on the move. This means that we must conduct successful enforcement aggression. We could help stop the flow of narcotics and violent behavior in transportation corridors across the entire state. I spent much of my career working in Southern California, so I have a different perspective now seeing how this activity crosses state lines. It is more critical than ever that the enforcement resources be available for this work as the complexity increases. Without focused and collaborative enforcement through a unified team like MGET, we would never be able to marshal the specific attention and resources gang crimes demand. I'd also like to note that those enforcement efforts have been highly successful. In just the past year, MGET had 492 contacts with suspected gang members and made 373 arrests. 224 of those were felonies, and seized 61 weapons, taking them off the street. Put simply, this is indispensable, complex, and vital work, which has direct safety and livability impact in our community. These enforcement efforts complement strong growth that we have seen in prevention as well. Through partnerships with POIC, the Boys and Girls Club, Friends of the Children, and many other community partners, the city has seen a substantial increase in our prevention efforts. I'm thrilled to have Mike Magnum here with me today. He's commonly referred to as Coach in Gresham, and he's one of our key prevention partners. Mike runs our Friday and Saturday night basketball program for at-risk youth, and the coach is the first one that we call when we have a gang issue that we need to confront. We are also very fortunate to be joined today by Multnomah County Sheriff's Commander Monty Reiser. Commander Reiser, Multnomah County Sheriff Mike Reese, they are both excellent partners, and their many years at the top level of law enforcement in our region make them an indispensable asset when it comes to addressing gang issues in our mutual efforts and approaches like MGET. I have to tell you that Gresham has the second lowest officer per capita rate in the state of Oregon. That doesn't make sense when we're the fourth largest city in this state. If we don't have this funding, I have to be honest with you, I don't think I can staff the MGET portion from Gresham. In closing, I would like to personally thank Senator Monis Anderson and Representatives Peluso and Gorsuch for their leadership in prioritizing funding for the East Metro Gang Enforcement Team. As police chief, I can honestly say I do not know how we would deploy resources to effectively address these issues without this partnership from the legislature. I deeply appreciate the support of our elected officials, and I'm grateful to this committee for the opportunity to have this issue heard today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair Gelser and members of the committee, it's a great pleasure to be here today to express strong support for Senate Bill 140, which provides funding for the East Metro Gang Enforcement Team. For the record, I'm Commander Monty Reiser of the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office. The Multnomah County Sheriff's Office has been a ground floor partner in this collaborative team since it was created. We have seen firsthand the results that can be achieved through a multi-jurisdictional law enforcement approach to multi-jurisdictional criminal networks. MGET serves all of East Multnomah County and specifically the communities of Gresham, Troutdale, Wood Village, and Fairview. With Multnomah County now providing law enforcement services to Fairview, Troutdale, and Wood Village through a contract, our participation in MGET is more critical than ever, and our appreciation for the importance of this unified approach is highly valued. It speaks volumes to the strength of this team that you have selected, that you have elected legislative leaders, our elected district attorney's office, and sheriff's office here today, together with the city of Gresham's chief of police, and a gang prevention and outreach worker to testify to its importance. MGET is the law enforcement wing of a broad approach to youth gang and violence issues, with other prongs being prevention and intervention. All of the jurisdictions certainly work tremendously hard in those arenas as well, along with nonprofit partners. But we know that law enforcement is a critically important variable in this equation. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak to the effectiveness of the East Metro Gang Enforcement Team and express our strong support for Senate Bill 140. We deeply appreciate the legislature's partnership. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Gelser, member of the committee, my name is Michael Mangum, and I work for Portland Opportunities and Industrialization Center, POIC, where I conduct gang outreach prevention through a partnership with the Gresham Police Department and oversee programming for at-risk youth. It is my pleasure to be here today in strong support of the East Metro Gang Enforcement Team. Also, through a partnership with the City of Gresham, I oversee a late-night basketball program in Gresham on Friday and Saturday nights. focus on giving at-risk youth a safe and healthy alternative to gang activity, also giving them an opportunity to learn discipline and teamwork. As a gang outreach worker, I build deep relationships with these young people and help them find better paths for their lives. I also work closely with the East Metro Gang Enforcement Team. When they have high-profile or violent gang incidents, they call on me to work directly with the community in the immediate aftermath to ease tensions and help prevent retribution. In my experience, an effective approach to gang issues requires both prevention and enforcement. MGET provides this comprehensive approach, and my role is proof that this combined effort is seamless and effective. Too many communities in our country have a firewall between prevention workers and law enforcement workers, both sides not fully embracing or trusting the other. Our approach is the opposite. Law enforcement cannot be effective without strong outreach and prevention services. Likewise, prevention cannot be effective in communities that don't have strong enforcement efforts to ensure appropriate consequences for criminal behavior. In Gresham, I am known among the youth as Coach Mike, and I very much embrace this role. As an outreach worker, my eye is on prevention and helping at-risk young people make positive decisions. These deep relationships come into play when I'm called upon in the middle of the night to report to a scene of gang violence and work with those same young people in heated, passionate, and emotional moments to think about their future and make positive decisions, breaking the cycle of violence. We are making strong progress, but the issues are not going away due to the continued march of poverty and criminal behavior being pushed out of inner Portland and into East Multnomah County. The legislature's appropriation for MGET is a critical piece of the answer to this chronic societal issue. I strongly urge the committee to support Senate Bill 140. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
Thank you all very much. Are there any questions for this panel?
I have one.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you for the work you do for the city and your commitment to safety and everybody there. What's the biggest driving factor of the gang population? Is it drugs?
Drugs is a big part of it. Part of it's poverty, too. There's not as many jobs, and they don't have any work, so they tend to look to crime.
Sheriff, and same for you then?
Madam Chair and committee members, yes, definitely poverty. We also see some growing issues relative to sex trafficking and gun sales as well.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Denbrough?
Yeah, how about the challenges of housing instability? They're kind of significant out there, aren't they? A lot of people who've moved recently, it's kind of a community in transition and maybe disruption, isn't it?
I would agree that in Rockwood alone, we have such high density there that it creates the opportunity for more crime there based on that. And with the gentrification from Portland, it's just been ongoing.
And Madam Chair, thank you. I did a lot of door knocking during this last campaign season, and I would knock on doors, and one of the voters said, "Oh, look it, we had a gang shooting, and there's the bullet right in the wall right next to his apartment." But they are very good people. Most of them are very good people. They're hardworking people. They're low income, and they do want safety. But housing and rent is a critical issue.
Thank you. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
So now we'll bring back up Nathan Vasquez. And just so you're not all alone, let's bring Representative Peluso with you.
Doing cleanup.
Thank you, Chair Gelser.
Welcome. Come on
up. And let's let Mr. Vasquez go first.
Thank you, Chair Gelser, for having me here today, members of the committee. It is my pleasure to be here. I am a deputy district attorney with Multnomah County. I'm here on behalf of district attorney Rod Underhill. And I work on a day-in, day-out basis with East Metro Gang Enforcement Team. I am a line prosecutor. I do gang prosecution, and I also go out into the field with them, and we work together very collaboratively, and it's a partnership which, from the district attorney's office, is essential. Rod Underhill has greatly invested in the Rockwood and East Multnomah County area through a dedication of resources, particularly in supporting the East Metro Gang Enforcement Team, the Gresham Police Department, and the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office. And we've done that because we've recognized how much of an impact East Metro Gang Enforcement Team has. They are a unique group of officers, and it is through having them as a separate individualized unit where they provide a specialized expertise that is needed when what we see is a changing and evolving gang issue. It is one that I've heard multiple individuals identify some of the drivers and some of the things that are behind it. We've also seen that that's evolved through time, and it is absolutely necessary for us to have this dedicated unit that covers this particular geographical area. And it has been my personal experience, particularly in the last 2 to 3 years, in how effective they can be in from a day-in, day-out prosecution method. I think in my written comments, I cited some of the recent prosecutions I have been involved with for attempted aggravated murder, in which the East Metro Gang Enforcement Team was a vital part in the investigation and the successful prosecution of a very violent crime. But I would also be very careful to make sure that I point out that they are also great community members. They do trainings. They work with youth. There's a great deal of outreach that the officers themselves do. I see them on a day-in, day-out basis working with youth in the idea and hope that to steer them away from gangs and violence. And so as a partner of East Metro Gang Enforcement and as a community member, I urge you to continue to support them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Representative Peluso.
Good afternoon, Chair Gelser and members of the committee. My name is Carla Peluso, and I represent House District 50, which includes my hometown of the great city of Gresham. It is a great pleasure to be here this afternoon to testify in support of my top legislative priority, Senate Bill 140, which provides funding for the East Metro Gang Enforcement Team. As many of you know, prior to my service in the legislature, I served in the Gresham Police Department for 30 years, retiring from the department as chief of police. I was chief when this team was formed, and I am extremely proud of its continued success. As a law enforcement officer in Gresham for 3 decades, I have seen the ebb and flow of growth and change in the community from a very unique perspective. Early in my career, we dealt largely with property and nuisance crimes in what was a fairly small, sleepy town. By the time I retired, Gresham was Oregon's fourth largest city and dealt with every type of violent crime, gang crime, and narcotics crime that urban communities encounter. While those gang issues were coming to East Multnomah County throughout the last decade of my career, they have only continued to increase in more recent years. The Multnomah County Comprehensive Gang Assessment, published in 2014, speaks to the migration of criminal activity from the urban core of Portland into East Multnomah County, saying, overall crime in Multnomah County has decreased in recent years. This decrease masks a shift in criminal activity from northeast Portland to neighborhoods in southeast Portland, East Portland, and Gresham. The report goes on further detail the impacts of this shift, saying the overall level of reported Part 1 violent crimes in Multnomah County increased by 1% from 2012 to 2013. But this is the important part. But in the Rockwood neighborhood, rates increased by 62%. This is a monumental shift in a very short period of time, and as a career law enforcement professional, I can attest to the fact that numbers like this result in police chiefs raising their hands and saying they are facing issues bigger than any one jurisdiction can address, and that they need centralized help. We need our East Metro Gang Enforcement Team. MGET is that centralized help, and it is an investment that returns exceptional results for the state of Oregon. Successful enforcement in Gresham means fewer gang members conducting their trafficking, violence, and criminal enterprises across the state. Thank you for the opportunity to express my strong support for Senate Bill 140. I urge the committee to continue its support for this critical resource, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Representative Peluso?
Thank you.
See, you did such a good job.
Thank you.
Done. Great. And is there anybody else that wants to be? Yes, there is somebody else that wants to be heard on Senate Bill 140. Djemet Dogo?
Jim.
Please welcome.
Jimmy.
Jimmy? That's not what it says.
The NTI silence.
Oh, get it. I got it. Sorry.
Yeah.
Welcome.
He knows me for the last 18 years, so.
I'll remember next time. Although it's hard to keep up with Senator Dimbro. He always gets everything right.
All right. Thank you, the chair. Thank you, senator, member of the committee. My name is Jimmy Dogo. I am originally from Chad. I am the director of Africa House. Africa House is part of IRCO, the Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization. Been in business for the last 4 years. I'm here today to in support of the Bill 140. One of the reasons I'm here is that many refugees who are coming in the state of Oregon, and particularly in Portland, especially refugees from Africa, those families, especially the children, were either born in refugee camp or grew up in refugee camps. So when they come here, when they resettle here, the school system put them to school according to their age, then their skill. So there were no school in refugee camps. So the kid come here, 17 years old, 16 years old, were put in 10, 11, or 12th grade. They cannot compete with mainstream students. So those kids need extra help. But because their family, their parents are illiterate, some of them are illiterate even in their own language, those kids do not have support and cannot compete with other students in the classroom. And because they came here with zero economic asset, they were already resettled in neighborhoods that are gang affected. So those kids, because they cannot compete in school, they are vulnerable. They drop out of school and join different gang groups. So 2 years ago, we reached out to Multnomah County. We reached out to the city of Portland to get small funding to do a Saturday activity where we bring all the refugee kids from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m., help them with after school activity, academic activity, sport, and all those. So we keep them out of trouble, we keep them out of mall and all those. But with the city of Gresham, there is nothing. All the refugee, and particularly African refugee, are moving to city of Gresham because of the housing affordability. So those kids, their family bring them every Saturday to Portland. But the program we have in Portland is funded by city of Portland for the family who live in the Portland city limit. But we cannot say no to those families. So the family know that Saturday at 6 p.m., they are either taking TriMet to bring their children or drive their children to those activities because we rotate this activity to different community centers in Portland. So I am here to ask for support of this bill so that we may get funding to provide services to those kids who are struggling, who are already affected by gang activity. African family are new here. Is a very youthful community. We have between 11 to 21 years old. We have over 3,000 in Portland right now. We don't know what to do with them when it's come to gang issues. There is no program for our kids. There is nothing that the family can do. Most African community, we know about, you know, rebels, about clan, about warlord, but when it's come to urban issue, we have no clue. What is this gang issue? We want to educate the family so that the family can educate their children to stay out of trouble. So I'm here again to support this bill so that we can get services to those families who are moving to Gresham area. And thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. I came late, but I got a chance to speak. So again, thank you.
Well, thank you so very much. Are there any questions for Jimmy?
Thank you.
Yeah. Seeing none, thank you very much.
You
got that right, huh?
She's a quick learner.
Yeah, he's a good professor. Everybody should take classes at the other institution. So thank you all so much for a great presentation. Can we put this on for a work session on Monday?
Yeah.
Right, and we'll move it on to its next destination, and it's ready to go, Senator Mondes-Anderson. It doesn't need any amendments. It's just ready to go. Very good. So we'll work it on Monday. And is there anybody else that wants to be heard on Senate Bill 140? Seeing none, I'm closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 140. Thank you all again. And reopening the public hearing on Senate Bill 314. And I would invite Sam Barber and Mary Ellen Glenn, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Gelser, members of the committee. Thank you very much for giving us this time. My name is Mary Ellen Glenn. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Association of Relief Nurseries. Relief nurseries, as you've been told before, are private nonprofits that serve the most vulnerable young children and families at risk of abuse and neglect. I'll just give you the numbers here. We serve about 3,500 children and families throughout the state. We currently have 31 sites, so we've grown by leaps and bounds over the past 4 or 5 years. But there's still a gigantic need. Every relief nursery has a waiting list, and there are more communities that would like to open relief nurseries. DHS reported that last year, 11,191 children went into foster care, and that's, of course, 11,191 too many. Relief nurseries can help with that. We have a proven record of success in keeping kids out of foster care. 95% of the children who have been in relief nurseries for more than 6 months have no further reports of abuse and no further out-of-home placements. Parents report better family interactions, more reading with their children, less use of the emergency department, and even increased employment. As you also heard, relief nurseries are required by statute to raise 25% of what we receive in government funding from the community. We do this and even more. Last biennium, leveraging $16 million in local contributions and $12 million in other funds. So we almost triple what you give us every biennium. So we think we're a great investment, and we hope you'll support SB 314.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Gelser, members of the committee. I'm Sam Barber with the Oregon Association of Relief Nurseries. I just wanted to briefly describe for you what the bill does. The bill really tackles four issues. The first is that it recognizes the relief nursery model in statute. That is the minimum services a relief nursery must provide to be a relief nursery. The second is it recognizes the Oregon Association of Relief Nurseries as the certifying body for relief nurseries. Third, it exempts asset forfeiture funds that we receive from the state from the 25% cash match that you heard about earlier. Historically, the 25% cash match did not apply to those funds because they're so inconsistent. And SB 314 makes it clear that precedent continues. And lastly, it clarifies how our state funds may be used. There is a dash one amendment on OLIS that fixes some technical issues with the bill. It is close to being ready, but we're going to need one more amendment. For example, there is a line that got inadvertently removed that references the Early Learning Council and how relief nurseries shall be consistent with their voluntary early learning system, and that needs to be put back in. So with that, we're happy to take any questions and hope that you'll join us in supporting Senate Bill 314.
Very good. Thank you. Questions? Do you have an idea of when that additional amendment will be back?
Hopefully soon. We are working on conversations right now, and we're hoping by next week.
And you're working with Senator Winters to get that?
Exactly, yeah.
Great. So if you would just let Matt and I know when that's ready so we can get it posted as soon as it's ready to go.
Can do. And we'll try to work in the dash ones with the dash twos so you can just
do one.
Do one.
That's always very nice.
Yes.
That's always very nice. Thank you both very much.
Thank
Is there
you.
Anybody else that would like to be heard on Senate Bill 314? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 314. And we have extra minutes, which you get to take back into your afternoon. We'll see you all on Monday.
Outstanding.
We're adjourned. Monday.
Outstanding.
We're adjourned. We'll see you all on